This episode of the Tech Central podcast is brought to you by Pinnacle, Africa's top ICT distribution business, delivering the exceptional every time. I'm Duncan MacLeod, and you're listening to the Tech Central podcast. I'm delighted to be on a call now with radio DJ, MC, public speaker, voiceover artist, Apple aficionado, and all-round good guy, Mark Pilgrim, to talk about Apple's big developer conference, which is happening in San Francisco this week. Mark, welcome to the podcast. It's really great to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. And that was quite a long intro, but I suppose in my industry, we have our fingers in various pies within the industry doing lots of little different things.
Absolutely. Well, it's really great to have you here, Mark. We are recording live today. If you have any questions for Mark, please do send us a WhatsApp voice note. The number to do that is 071-999-1111. 071-999-1111. So, Mark, before we dive into Monday night's big Apple keynote, tell me a bit about what you're up to these days. I hear your voice in the mornings on my local radio station, Hot 91.9, which is a great channel, by the way. There's some real legends of South African radio on there, including yourself, Kevin Savage, Tony Morell, and many others. It's definitely carved a niche for itself amongst Joburg listeners. Who's behind Hot 91.9?
So it's a bloke called Lloyd Mudderay, who used to be a music manager on Jacaranda, and he spent time on Highveld, so he's got such a good radio pedigree. So when it came to starting Hot 91.9, he knew exactly what the formula should be. And it's really a bunch of, without it sounding like an old boys club, it's a lot of the old 5FM guys from the 90s. We're all together, and we're just having lots of fun. We're playing no Justin Bieber. It's all about good old school tunes from the 80s and 90s.
Fantastic, fantastic. I grew up in Durban, Mark, listening to Capital Radio 604 and listening to that station. Also grew a love for radio as a medium. It was a great channel back in the day.
Well, lots of the guys I'm working with were with 604 before I even got onto radio. So some of the names you mentioned, they've got that old British kind of twang.
Yeah.
And from 604, a lot of them moved on to either 702 or to 5FM. And for the last 3.5 years, we've been on the Joburg airwaves. And what's interesting is that we're starting to get more and more people outside of Joburg know about us. And for the listeners right now who don't know about us, and you're not in Joburg, because in Joburg, we're on the dial 91.9. And if you're not in Joburg, we're on DSTV channel 822. And we're also streaming on the TuneIn app. So you can listen to us wherever you may be. And more people are starting to do that.
Absolutely. The internet is revolutionizing the radio business, that's for sure. Now, Mark, you have a long career in radio and broadcasting more broadly. You've been on 5FM, 94.7, I think 94.5 KFM as well, amongst other stations. You've also hosted a number of TV shows, including Big Brother on Mnet. I'm curious, what do you prefer more as a medium, TV or radio?
I was chatting about that just today at the radio station, actually, with one of my news editors, because she's both on radio and TV. And we both agreed that television, nothing beats the live energy of television. There's some excitement there because you're always on the verge of something going wrong because you're not in total control. You're just the face of what's happening, but you've got a whole team behind you that are doing their respective roles. And if any one of them dropped the ball or you as a presenter dropped the ball, you're all in it together trying to make it work. So the energy of live TV is great, but the intimacy of radio, nothing can beat. And I always use the analogy, if I'm walking through Sandton City and someone spots me and they know me, if they just nudge their partner and kind of whisper to each other, there's Mark, that's probably a TV viewer. But if they see me and they go, hey, Mark, how's it? From across the radio listener, I'm generalizing, but that's the intimacy of radio, that people really feel they know you on radio so much more than TV.
That's so true, Mark. That's so true. So you've written a book about your fight with cancer called Beyond the Baldness. It was released a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah, it came out about 2 years ago.
All right.
Life's a blur. I think maybe two and a half years ago. Let's split the difference.
You were diagnosed with an aggressive form of cancer all the way back in 1998 when I think you were only 18 years old. That must have scared the living daylights out of you.
It did, but also there was a certain ignorance because back then in the 80s, no one was talking about cancer. So me being diagnosed, first of all, I took too long to get diagnosed because I didn't know what to look out for.
Yeah.
But once I was diagnosed, it did hit me that my life was in jeopardy, but it just didn't seem real. Mm-hmm. These days, we talk so much more about cancer, and we're much more aware of how to fight it, the battle, and also those that lose their lives. But I was a naive 18-year-old. The only thing I was worried about was losing a testicle and thinking, oh, my goodness me, how's that going to fare down the line?
Yeah, I'm sure that was very high on the list of concerns as an 18-year-old. How did you go about beating it?
There were dark days. Mm-hmm. And there was a period where, because for many people, chemotherapy is the outer manifestation of the disease. It's not the cancer that makes you sick. It's the chemotherapy that makes you violently ill. It makes you vomit. It makes you lose weight. It makes you have no energy. So eventually you start having a loathing for the chemotherapy more than the cancer. Mm-hmm. And it's the chemotherapy that's saving your life. And I did go through a low point, and there was times when I thought, I'm not going to do this anymore. I can't do another round of chemotherapy. But slowly but surely, eventually down the line, your markers, which they see in your blood, shows that you are responding. And then you know it's a matter of time. But there were definitely dark days. And I often say to people that are undergoing chemotherapy, people want you to be strong 100% of the time. I say it's like when you're on those diets and you cheat on a Sunday and have pizza. Mm. You're allowed to have a bad day where you feel weak, you feel sorry for yourself, you have a cry. That's okay. And then the next day you get back on that horse and you fight.
Yeah. The doctors, they basically give you as much chemo as you can take. My father has cancer, and it appears that they simply administer the chemo until you simply can't take it anymore and you say stop.
Yeah, you know, chemotherapy has changed a lot in the, 30 years since I had chemo. And I would imagine it's improved a lot. But I think depending on the cancer you've got, there's different regimes, there's different chemicals they give you. Some affect you more than others. I could only relate to my own experience that I would be on chemo for 2.5 hours at a time. And, you know, for the next couple of days thereafter, you feel absolutely awful. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things you need to do.
Yeah. So how long did it take before you got a clean bill of health?
It was 9 months. And that's one of the joyous moments in my life. You're never cured.
Yep.
It's never such a finite word. The word is remission. But to hear that word remission is one of the sweetest words any cancer patient can ever hear.
I'm sure. And there's been no reoccurrence of the cancer in that period.
No. So I still go for, initially it was every 6 months and every year.
Yeah.
I'm still down to every 2 years go for a checkup. And I'm sure, you know, it's about time to have a finger. Someone has to play a ventriloquism act because, you know, I'm of that age now. One of those dreaded checks. If people know what I'm talking about, they know. But it's one of those things you have to do. It's so prevalent and it affects so many people.
Yeah. And not enough people do it, I guess.
Well, a lot of people are ostriches with their heads in the sand, including myself when I had cancer way back when. I had a testicle that started getting larger. And I remember for the first couple of days or maybe week or two or three, I don't remember the timeline because that's how ignorant I was of it all. Mm-hmm. But as it was getting bigger, I kept justifying to myself that it was normal and that's what it normally is like. But there was a part of me in the back of my brain that knew something wasn't right, but I just didn't know what to do about it.
Mm. And Mark, that wasn't your only major health scare. About 10 years ago or so, you suffered a major heart attack. I think you were fortunate enough to be in a doctor's rooms at the time. What happened? I believe you were eating quite healthily at the time, and you certainly weren't a candidate for a heart attack. How did it come about?
If I'm a cat, I have 7 lives left. I did lose 2. One of them to cancer, the other one to heart disease. I didn't realize. I was Mr. Health and Fitness. I was, you know, one of those poster boys for getting to shape, even though I'm not on a sports field 6 days a week. And I still do live a very healthy life. I watch what I eat, control my fats, go to gym 4 or 5 times a week. I'm not overweight. And yet I had a heart attack. So the question is why? And I didn't know the answer initially, but I've got a history of heart disease, mm-hmm. which I didn't really think mattered because I was living a healthy life.
Yeah.
And cholesterol got the better of me. My cholesterol wasn't exorbitantly high for, say, an average person, but if you have a family history of heart disease, the numbers mean so much more. Mm-hmm. And just for those that don't know, you know, over five, you want to be under five. I'm just using the basic scale. Under five is good. Between five and seven, you need to start looking at what you're doing. Over seven, if your cholesterol's over seven, you've got to do something. Mine was 5.8 when I had the heart attack.
Sure.
But my, you know, one of my arteries closed up, and it didn't close up, boom, just like that. I had the signs for 2 days before. I was just filming a brand new game show on Mnet.
Yeah.
And I remember it was a Friday afternoon. It was called The Power of 10. And we had 200 audience members in front of me. I'm on stage, and I get a slight pain in my chest, in the center of my chest. And the two things that went through my mind as I was reciting television lines, like, welcome to the Power of 10, Mnet's biggest game show, blah, blah, blah. And my mind's still going, why am I short of breath? The two things that went through my mind was, well, maybe I'm subconsciously nervous because game shows don't always work that well in South Africa. And now I'm hosting, at that time, the biggest game show in the country. And we didn't know if it would work or not work. As it turned out, it wasn't that great. But as we were filming the show, I was a bit nervous about that. But I thought, well, why would I be short of breath? I love being on TV. And the second thing that went through my mind was, thank goodness it's not my heart because the pain is in the center of my chest.
Mm-hmm.
And here's one of the big life lessons I learned is that your heart is in the center of your chest. We all think it's right under the nipple.
Yes.
On the one side. The heart sits skew, so it kind of leans there. But it's really sitting in the center of your chest. And I didn't realize that.
I don't know that either.
Yeah. So I often, when I do motivational talks now, one of the exercises I do is I tell people to put their right hand in the air and then place it over their heart and then don't move it based on what the person next to them is doing. And I would say probably 75%, 80% of the people get it wrong as to where their heart is. And that was one of my big mistakes because I felt the pain and then it disappeared. And over 2 days, it kept coming and going. And when I eventually decided to go to the doctor on the Monday morning, as I'm sitting staring at the doctor, I have a heart attack, a full-on heart attack. If you're going to have a heart attack, that's a really good place to have it, by
absolutely,
the way.
Absolutely.
I mean, that saved my life. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here now. So there's a little angel looking over my shoulder. And I do try and use whatever platform I'm on. And I'm grateful that we're having this discussion now because there might be that small little bit of information that could save someone's life.
Mm. Yeah, and the symptoms of a heart attack are very similar to a panic attack, which is what you could have been having during that game show, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, not everyone just drops down and, you know, goes unconscious. When I had my actual heart attack, so I had angina pains. I must always make sure I say the word correct.
I'm
a little kid at heart. I want to giggle. I had angina pains where it kind of almost closes totally and opens up again.
Right.
And I knew something was wrong. And of all the people that should know to go have something checked straight away, it's me because of what I did with cancer. I didn't go have it checked straight away. And by the way, going back to the cancer, because I left it, it spread from my testes and it went to my lungs and my kidneys. So literally, I mean, the moment you pick up there's an anomaly, the quicker you can nip it in the bud, the better your chances of survival.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, 10% of my heart doesn't work now. Maybe if I had gone to the doctor on that Friday, maybe 100% of my heart would still work. But, you know, I'm a stats man by profession as well, and I'll take 90% of my heart working. That's still a good number for me.
So you were born in England, right, Mark? You came to South Africa at a fairly young age. I think you went to Sasolburg High School, is that right?
Yes, and then after matric, I got parole and left Sasolburg. It wasn't too bad. I mean, one of the nice things about Sasolburg High, Sasolburg High School, is that we called the teachers ma'am. And I always thought there was something so nice about ma'am as opposed to miss. I just like that. But yes, I was in Sasolburg and came to Joburg to start at Wits and never left.
Right. What did you study?
I've got a BCom in industrial psychology.
All right. Okay. Did your parents, did your dad work for Sasol or what was the reason for being in Sasolburg?
Yeah, my stepdad actually worked on the power stations. I forget which one now in Sasolburg, but also I lived in Creel for a while.
Creel, where is that?
Creel near Secunda and Witbank, and he worked on one of the power stations there. So
okay.
I came from these small dorpies.
Yeah.
And that's why initially for me, radio, it seemed like it was a dream of mine to be on radio, but it seemed so far away because I was a small hick.
Yes.
I was a small town boy.
Yes.
I didn't know anything about city life, let alone being on a radio station and being on TV.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe I was looking at your website this morning. Your bio said you used to walk around the town making announcements about lost dogs or something.
Yes, when I was in Creole in primary school, I had a little battery-operated mic and speaker, and I'd strap the speaker to my back, and I would ride around on my bike announcing lost dogs, which I fabricated. That was just my way of trying to pretend I was on radio. And even before being on radio, but when I was in Joburg, I'd work at the ranch show. I'd be that guy with the coat hanger around his neck and a microphone. That was my little version of also being on radio. And I saw all different things. You know, there was a manual food processor. And I remember chip, chop, slice, dice, great garnish, shred. No longer do you have to go to ING, but Eck and J, kind of summer self mark. All the little sales lines we had at the Rand Easter show.
So when did your break into radio come?
It was not as quick as I think many people have these days. And I think it's a lot easier these days for many reasons. First of all, there's community stations, there's retail radio, there's online radio. There's so many platforms you can start out on. And also these days, you know, if you have a big Twitter following, you seem to suddenly become a radio DJ.
Right.
Which was not the same back in the day. I spent about 8 years auditioning. And one of my great stories is even Pick and Pay Hyper in Norwood turned me down as an in-store announcer, which I'm grateful for, because I might be telling you about a special on Butterfish in aisle 5 now instead of all the other things we're talking about. So it wasn't an easy journey. I auditioned for 8 years, got so many rejection letters. One of the rejection letters I actually posted on Twitter last week was from 702, saying that I need to practice my diction, especially the letter R, because the part of England I come from, we don't say R, we say woo. Huh? So it would be, there's a wabbit, twally for twally. So I had to
Like the
Checkers guy. You have to be old school to remember the Checkers guy. Clive Wheel, I think it was, twally for twally.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I was Clive Wheel, twally for twally. So even now, all these years later, by default, I want to say woo. And I have to almost consciously, every time a dominant R comes up, I have to say to myself, go not ooh.
So with the way, I mean, we've seen how the internet has changed so many industries, newspapers in all sorts of trouble as media has gone online. What do you think of the emergence of podcasting? We're talking on a podcast now, live streaming on the internet. How's that going to change the radio industry going forward, do you think?
Well, I think it's very much like television show streaming. I mean, there are many people that no longer watch live TV. It's all about binge watching their favorite show when they want to watch it.
Yeah.
And I think radio has started moving in that direction as well. I think there's still something for live radio. There's still, it seems like a real conversation, an intimate conversation happening right now, but especially with informative podcasts. I listen to podcasts every single day, and not just someone playing music, but it tends to be more talk. But I catch up on what I don't hear the day before, and it's all via podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Great. Well, Mark, this is a tech show, so let's talk about Apple. I think it's fair to say that you are smitten with Apple products and the Apple ecosystem. So I thought, who better to unpack this week's big news out of California than Mr. Mark Pilgrim? When did the Apple bug bite for you, and how many Apple devices have you owned over the years?
That's a very good question. I mean, right now I'm running, I've got a MacBook Pro, I've got a 12-inch MacBook, I've got two iPads. Okay, my daughters are using those. I'm running 5 Apple TVs in the house, two of them the fourth generation. The others the older generation 3. I've still got a time capsule. I'm running Apple Expresses, which are now outdated, because Apple have given up the router element and that kind of thing. What I'm waiting for, there's one glaring thing missing from my Apple ecosystem, and I'm sure that you also would, you know, if you might have one already if you got it from overseas. I'm waiting for the HomePod.
The HomePod.
Oh, I can't wait for the HomePod.
I'm sure you can source one through unofficial channels.
Yeah, but I don't do great imports now. I learned my lesson. I remember it was an iPhone 4 I got from overseas, and it went a bit wonky on me, and you know, the official channels didn't want to look at it to repair it. So I thought, well, that I got bitten in the bum there. I won't do that again. So I'm very happy to wait so that there's a proper warranty without me going to some third party. Mm-hmm. But my Apple love started back in, I think it was 2008. My wife went to New York. She wasn't even my wife then. She was just my Macy. And she went to New York, and she came back with an iPhone. And I thought, well, I've got my HTC. I don't, you know, these iPhones look a bit big. How funny. Now we go back to the original iPhone and it's so small. But I remember looking at the iPhone going, well, it's a bit big. My little HTC is so cute and tiny. But I fell in love with it. And after a couple of months, I thought, if the phone is this good, the MacBook, the laptops, the computers must be equally so. And you don't go back. I know you're an Android guy and probably a Windows guy, but it's just not for me.
Sure.
Not for me.
Sure, sure. Was that the HTC?
And it was hard in the beginning because a lot of programs didn't really work that well on Mac because, or they didn't have a Mac version. So you were running parallels on your system and trying to make it work. But these days, you know, fortunately, most developers do things for Windows and for Mac. And I mean, one of the things we'll talk about, I mean, Office 365 is coming to the Mac App Store.
Oh, wow.
For the MacBooks.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, there's a whole integration now that never used to be there.
Absolutely. In fact, Office used to be a bit of a second cousin on Mac. Microsoft never seemed to pay too much attention to it. I remember when Outlook on Mac used to be called Entourage.
Entourage, yes.
It really wasn't very good software, but Microsoft fortunately has upped their game in that regard, and the Mac software is pretty much as good as the Windows versions now.
Absolutely. For me, it's almost, if not exactly the same. I don't really work on a Windows computer, but I'm, you know, I keep saying to people, don't get worried when you send me something to my Mac. I'm running Microsoft Word on my computer. But what is going to be happening soon, you know, you can download Office 365 directly from Microsoft. But the small change that will be coming, which they announced at WWDC, is that for the first time, Office 365 will actually be in the Mac App Store itself.
What's the significance of that?
I think just generally, it really means that there's an acceptance and they're shaking hands. For me, as a Mac user, it's like when you're with your iPhone and you're downloading things from the App Store. You know that there's a certain safety and security. Not that I'm worried about downloading Office 365 directly from Microsoft, but just generally with apps these days, if I download something on my MacBook from the App Store, there's a certain degree of comfort and security. When I'm downloading it directly from a website, a third-party website, there's always a little element in the back of my mind that, are you putting a little lurgy on my computer that I don't know about?
Yeah, yeah. So, Mark, I have to ask this. Do you ever look over the fence into the world of Android and Windows and think, hey, that's pretty...
No.
Pretty, no, you don't.
No.
That's a very firm no.
I won't mention the brand, but there was a brand that came onto my show for a while,
yeah,
and they were giving away phones, and it was an Android phone, and I thought, I am going to really give it a chance, and I'm going to pack my Apple away, my iPhone, and I'm going to just use this Android phone. I got 6 days down the line, and I had to stop. Not that there's anything wrong with it. I know Android listeners now are going, no. There's a market for both. And I'm not saying they're bad. It just wasn't for me. It was my personal preference. Yeah. I'm so used to the Apple way of doing things, the layout, the logic of going through various menus that I just had to go back. But also, having said that, if you buy into an Apple ecosystem, it makes a huge difference. You know, Apple is talking to Apple, to use a metaphor, which actually is quite literal as well. I was getting my Android to try and talk to my Apple ecosystem, and I was having to sometimes, you know, jump over a bridge here and there, and it just wasn't the same.
Yeah, yeah. It's just clean and neat, and everything works.
And also, for me, I've never got my head around the different skins with Android where, you know, if I've got an LG phone versus a Samsung phone, it still might not be exactly the same.
Yeah.
I just know with an iPhone, it's an iPhone.
Yeah, yeah. I must say the biggest annoyance of being an Android user is not getting updates immediately. On Apple, of course, you get the updates the moment they're available. In the Android world, you have to wait for your phone manufacturer to test the Android update on their devices, and eventually they'll send it out maybe 6 months or even 12 months after the fact, if they send it out at all. Which is a big advantage of using Apple.
I did try and dabble again with a bit of Android about a year or so ago, using some of my bank's reward beans or whatever they were.
Right.
The only thing that looked vaguely decent in the shop was this Android box, you know, TV box. Mm-hmm. And I received it, and it was the biggest load of rubbish. And I realized that it also had an older version of Android on. Now, forget all the names. What was the J one?
Jelly Bean.
Jelly Bean. So it might have been Jelly Bean. And the specific app that I really wanted to use was it could only run, I think, from Marshmallow up or something. And I couldn't upgrade it. I couldn't upgrade the Android on this box. Eventually, I literally chucked it in the bin.
Yeah, some of those Android TV boxes really are poor quality. So, Mark, WWDC, Worldwide Developers Conference, no hardware this time around. We'll have to wait until later in the year for that. September, I think, usually for the new iPhones, possibly new iPads and MacBooks at the same time. Maybe even a new Apple Watch, who knows? But the focus this time was entirely on the software. What were the highlights for you from this year's developer conference?
There were three. Look, there's many great things we can talk about, and I'm sure we will. But, I mean, if we had to go right to the top of the pyramid, there's one that stood out for me. And I actually tweeted about a day before it, WWDC, saying, I really hope that they do something about this. And they did. And I'm talking about the ability for parents to manage time for themselves, but also my focus was for kids on the iPad.
Yeah,
I want it built in natively into the software. So I didn't want a third party app. I've been dying for Apple to introduce directly into the software that I can control how much time my kids spend on whatever apps they spend their time on. And they did focus a bit on that, and they've got it. I think it's called For Kids. And that, for me, was the highlight. I'm not sure if that's something which was on your radar.
No, I did pick it up. In fact, it's in my show notes here. I thought that was quite interesting. So it really allows you to monitor and control the time your kids spend on their devices and using specific apps, right?
It's so nice because, first of all, it works for adults too, which I think we all need. We're trying really hard at home to reduce screen time at night, because it's so easy to just constantly pick up your phone and scroll through either Facebook or Twitter, even while you're brushing your teeth. So we try in the evenings now to not have the iPhone. I'm talking about mum and dad, because quite often the kids will come up and ask you something and you put them second, and that's just wrong. So we're really trying hard. We're not perfect. We have momentary lapses, but we're trying really hard to reduce screen time. But for my kids as well, they can spend 4 hours on an iPad and not even blink, literally not blink. And I find that when they come out of that iPad, they're so arrowly focused and ratty that I really wanted something which would say, first of all, okay, you've spent 2 hours on your iPad, and I want to be able to limit certain apps. Now, I haven't really thought it through which apps I'd want them to limit, because my daughters are quite young and they really only go onto YouTube Kids and, you know, a Toca story or a Toca game. But that the ability to have that flexibility, and what's nice is you can do it as a parent. If you've got the family sharing and they're on a family sharing account, I can do it from my phone. I can create the restrictions. So it's not only done locally on their iPad, but from my phone, I can restrict their iPad, which is nice.
They're not going to like this.
I think they're too young to fully comprehend it, but I've got a 6 and an 8-year-old. But normally they're quite good. If I say iPad's down, and then I normally have to follow it up by I'm counting to 3. they do. But I think it's just something that's very essential, because we are living in a digital world, and I'm very happy. I've got a friend whose young daughter doesn't even know what an iPad is, and that's great. I just believe that it is the way it's moving. They've learned a lot. They can learn a lot using the technology. But there's also a time for that tactile experience where I want my girls to play with their Barbie dolls, or at the moment it's LOL dolls, and go outside and swing on the swing. It'll never be to the same degree that we did back in the day.
On our bicycles in the bush.
Yeah, but that for me was one of the highlights. When they spoke about that, I'm like, I almost got as excited as the very first time they announced the Apple Watch. I remember being in the lounge when I stood up and I cheered. And I kid you not, I think a little tear came to the corner of my eye. And my wife stuck her head in. She goes, oh, my God. I said, they've just announced the Apple Watch. I was over the moon. Even though I'm still – have you got an Apple Watch? You're Android.
I'm Android, but I don't – I wear a Garmin smartwatch because I do trail running. But it looks nice. Do you use it quite a lot?
I do, but I did the whole Discovery freebie. It wasn't really that free after all kind of thing.
Right.
And I'm still running the original Apple Watch 1. And I mean, already they're on, is it version three?
I think it's three.
I think it's the third one now. I mean, the software, I think it's the fifth iteration of the software coming out. But I think hardware, I think it's the third one. I don't use it for, you know, I don't check mail. I don't do all of that stuff on the Apple Watch because my phone's always with me and it's easier. It really is so I don't miss a call and I get to see an accurate time on my arm, and that's pretty much it.
You don't use it for workouts?
Well, here's the thing, and I don't know whether you had planned to get into this a bit later, but when they were talking about Apple Watch and they're creating all these activities for running, for swimming, for cycling, they haven't quite mastered it yet for gymming. I'm a gym boy, and I'm a lazy gymmer. I'll go on the treadmill once in a while, but I'm in the weights pit, and I'm banging weights around. They've got certain brands of machines where you can somehow sync it with your watch, and it'll work out something. But when it comes to lifting dumbbells, they still have nothing. So it's that's lacking, but that's just my little world of exercise.
Right. So, but if you're a runner and you need use the GPS functionality, I'm sure it works very well.
I'm sure it does. But if I was a runner, I don't know whether, you know, maybe there's other brands which just do a better job.
Yeah.
A lot of my running friends who are all like Forrest Gump, you know, they all do 10Ks and not break out in a sweat. I don't think many of them have got the Apple Watch. I think if you're a serious runner, my gut says, and I could be wrong, and maybe someone will tell me I'm wrong, and please do, that there's just better devices out there. There's better smartwatches to record what you're doing and map it and
I think you're
massage
right.
your arm while you're running. I don't know.
Yeah, there are companies that specialize in sports watches like Suunto and Garmin who probably do a better job of this. Do you think, Apple was, I think, hoping that the Apple Watch would be the next big category, almost like the next iPhone, which it hasn't really been, has it?
Look, it hasn't been a damn squid. I think it has had success, and I think they were talking just recently about it's the number one smartwatch in the world and has overtaken sales of, Swiss manufacturers.
Yeah.
But I just believe they do have some fighting competition in that category. But I don't know enough about it because I must say that whilst I'm wearing the watch right now, I'll often not wear the watch.
Mm-hmm.
It's not one of those essentials for me. For me, it's more important to always have my phone with me
than
it is to have a watch.
And the watch, of course, unless you're buying that latest cellular version, doesn't work without your iPhone paired to it. And that means carrying both devices with you.
And that's a whole thing which I haven't really focused on, but I thought the idea of, because I think it's got an embedded SIM? And I don't even know if our network's actually geared up. That's the one with Apple Watch has got the little red dot on to show it's one of those cellular ones. I know when it first came out, our networks weren't geared for that. I'm not sure whether anything has changed. But you know, some people love it, and that's great. And I do use my watch a lot. But if I didn't have it, honestly, I wouldn't miss it.
Mm. They announced a walkie-talkie feature during the keynote for the Apple Watch. Did that excite you at all?
It did. And I tell you, I've got three things that I've marked as my top things.
Right.
And we've already now spoken about two of them. FaceTime, not FaceTime, that's my third one, actually. The first one was, of course, the time management. My second one I've got marked actually is, I've got here Apple Watch-walkie-talkie. Because I'm an old school guy and I was brought up on the CB radio.
Right.
Now, I don't know how old you are, Duncan, but did you ever dabble in the CB radio?
My dad did. I didn't.
That makes me feel really old.
No. I'm not much younger than you, Mark, believe me.
I spent about 27 years on the CB radio.
Okay.
It was, you know, it was before the time of cell phones. It's when you could communicate. I had a CB in the car. I lived in Hillbrow. I had a big base station antenna, which, by the way, is still on one of the buildings now in Berea. Just off Tudhope Avenue. I'm not sure if it's still called Tudhope Avenue, but my antenna is still sitting on a water tower all these many years later. So I lived in a few different buildings over the years. This is a quarter wave antenna. It's about 2 meters up, and it's got, you know, a couple of big poles coming out the sides.
Is someone still using it?
Is
someone still using it?
Oh, no, probably not. No. No, it's probably sitting there and no one knows what the hell it's for, and maybe they think it's being used by, you know, some company renting space.
Yeah.
Not at all. But I love the CB. And even now, when we go on holiday, if we go to Mauritius or somewhere, I still, whenever I'm at a little gadget shop, I say to my wife, oh, should we buy these walkie-talkies just in case you're at the beach and I'm in the room? And I once made her do it. I had these small, I forget the brand now, with the Zuck, anyway, with the Z, walkie-talkies. And I wanted her to clip it on the, I wanted her to clip it on the side of her bikini, and she said no, and it caused a fight.
Yeah.
But I just love the idea. I've got Zello, the software app on my phone, which I've used once or twice. But just the idea of a walkie-talkie, that's a fun thing. Would I really use it? I don't know. I can't imagine my wife at Woolies. I'm kind of Big Ten 4. Good buddy to my wife. Well, I think she'd still prefer a phone call.
I must say, my wife and I use WhatsApp voice notes all the time. It's pretty much how we communicate. We don't phone each other. We just send voice notes on WhatsApp. Very useful indeed. And I suppose this is a similar idea.
Well, that's what more and more people are starting to do, isn't it? It's a WhatsApp voice note. It's not even a text message. And yeah, I mean, that's the way it's going. There'll always be a place for this walkie-talkie. I think where software apps like Zello really come to the fore is with community watch things, you know, these neighborhood watches where they create their own channel and they can all communicate in real time. So it's got a real use now. I don't know whether anyone's still got an old CB radio. But
sure
I like
it.
I like the walkie-talkie. Of all the gimmicks, I mean, the walkie-talkie thing appeals to me more than a – what do they call their new emojis? Memojis or
Memojis,
something.
Memojis, yeah, yeah. That was the low point of the presentation for me, I must say.
You know, if you're focusing 20 minutes of your time on a Memoji, I'm thinking, wow, that probably means there's no other great crackers in your box.
I guess it's aimed at kids more than anything else. You wanted to talk about FaceTime, Mark. What specifically?
Oh, yes,
about
that was
FaceTime?
The other thing. It was just something that they brought up, and I don't FaceTime a lot. You know, my wife and I don't know when you communicate with your wife. I don't know if you video FaceTime. You know, if I'm doing a gig out of town, I'll sometimes video FaceTime my wife. But I know that she's got all these different WhatsApp groups, and I just thought of my wife straight away, thinking, this is so nice. You can now multi-video FaceTime up to 32 people, and that's just incredible. Not that you'd want 32 people, but let's say you, me, and a third person were having a video chat. Suddenly, poof, it's all there. And I like the organic way that whoever's talking, so it's not a predefined screen, pardon me, with, you know, each little viewing block is a set size. It's organic. So the person talking kind of comes to the fore, and then as the other person talks, they come to the fore.
That
so
is
it's
very
quite
clever.
A fluid screen.
Very clever. Very, very clever. It's a great implementation of software, actually. I'm surprised that I think Skype does it now on Windows, probably on Mac as well.
I've never really dabbled. You know, I've never thought about it, but there's something about it being FaceTime, which just conceptually makes it seem a bit easier. I don't know why. I mean, if it works on Skype, then in fact, after I went yay, 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 when they mentioned it, I said that on Twitter, someone else said to me, but WeChat's had it for ages. I'm like, well, yes, we all downloaded WeChat when Gareth Cliff started Cliff Central. And then after getting all those stupid beans and little awards and things for, you know, it seemed like a stupid app. I think half of us deleted it.
Yeah, I certainly don't use it anymore. The only issue with FaceTime, of course, is it's not cross-platform. It's Apple to Apple only. So if you're in that ecosystem and your friends are in that ecosystem, it's fine. But if you've got to talk to someone on Android, you can't use FaceTime.
Well, it's exactly the same with text messaging as well. My wife and I still iMessage each other.
Yeah.
And everyone else, I WhatsApp.
Right.
Regardless of what. Yeah, it just seems to be the thing to do. But my wife and I have always just stuck to
FaceTime.
To iMessage.
Oh, I'm Oak for, okay,
but,
yeah.
But I can't think of any other friend, even if they, you know, well, they would have to have an iPhone. I don't iMessage them. It's a WhatsApp thing, so it is a cross-platform. You don't have to worry.
Yeah.
Something nice about the blue ticks knowing they get the message and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I wonder why Apple doesn't make it cross-platform. You'd think they'd have a lot more users if they did.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually a very good point. I don't know what the reasoning is behind that. You know, other software manufacturers make things for iOS, so why don't they do it for
Android?
For them, yeah. Good point.
So I don't know if you saw the stuff on the new workflows. I thought that was quite interesting, in that you can now create Siri shortcuts. So you tell it, I'm going home now, and it will, for example, fire up your Spotify and send a message to your wife to tell her that you're leaving the office, pretty much whatever you wanted to do. Can you see yourself using that?
Well, funny enough, my Siri is not working too well. I've got an iPhone 7 still at the moment, and Siri just will not listen to me. She answers me, and then after I ask something, she just shuts down again and ignores me.
She's moody.
So I'm not having a good relationship with Siri at the moment. But conceptually, I think it's a great idea. I mean, that whole artificial intelligence thing where it's predictive as well. It's not only reactive. It's forward-thinking. So if you're late for a meeting, And it can pick up that you're late for the meeting because you're not at that location, for instance, that your diary says you're supposed to be at. It predictively pops up saying, do you want to let this person know that you're running late? I think that's fabulous. I think it'll take a while to iron out the little lurgies in the system, but isn't that phenomenal where we're going?
Yeah. And all of the big tech companies are focusing very heavily on machine learning and AI technology. So I think these little devices in our pockets are going to be so, so much smarter in just a couple of years from now.
There will be a little bit of backlash or a bit of resistance from those that say, listen, I don't want Apple servers knowing exactly where I am, what I'm doing. You know what? I'm not robbing a bank. It doesn't really faze me. You know, if it knows where I am, that's okay.
Yeah. Have you ever looked at your location history in Google? That's quite eye-opening.
I disabled that.
Oh, you did? Okay.
I don't know why. When I got that email at the end of the month saying, this is where you went, and I saw a map of where I was, I'm like, I don't know. Does it bug me? Does it not bug me? I'm not sure, so let me rather just disable that.
Right. I left it
even
on.
Even though I've just said I'm not fazed if someone knows where I am, but when I saw it graphically like that on a map, I thought,
seeing places you've been, you'd even forgotten you'd been. I've left it on, but it is a bit creepy, I must say.
But also, once again, me being, you know, I consider Google not being part of the Apple ecosystem. So it was like access denied.
Access denied. So do you use Apple Maps instead of Google Maps?
No, that's one thing I don't use.
You don't use Maps at all?
No, having said that, no, I don't use Apple Maps at all. It doesn't even, after, you know, it was a disaster when they started it, and the legacy of that still sticks with me.
Right.
I'm a Waze guy, which I know is linked to Google.
Yeah.
Waze, I will not go down the road without putting Waze on. I just think it's phenomenal, and I'm so amazed that people still don't know about Waze. Yeah. And, I mean, to give you an example, for those that are going, Waze, I've heard of it. When I go to work every morning to the radio station, there's probably 5 different routes I can take. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, there's always a traffic nightmare in the mornings in Johannesburg.
Yeah.
And without fail, it'll guide me correctly. It'll choose the route which has got the least amount of traffic or whatnot. And I get there pretty much on the time it says I will every single time.
Yeah, no, it's a brilliant, brilliant app. I've actually recently reinstalled it on my phone. I tried it out a couple of years ago. For some reason, I went back to Google Maps, but I've recently put it back on my device. And
I think Google Maps for me looks more professional, but because Waze, you know, you've got the little characters, and you know, now I'm a master knight or something. So initially, I thought this is a bit like a WeChat thing, man, with these little icons, but. But it just works. The predictive element of it is so good. And then also the aspect where I think it has changed, but Google Maps used to show a red road to show there was traffic, but it wouldn't intelligently reroute you. Mm-hmm. Whereas Waze always did that. If I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, I think Google does do it now. But now I'll just stick with Waze. I like the idea that if something happens, it'll actually say to me, okay, suddenly you were going to go straight, but turn left.
Yeah. And it does it timelessly. My problem with Google Maps is, I get on the highway and then I hit a traffic jam because there's an accident ahead. 2 minutes later, while I'm sitting in the traffic jam, I then get a message from Google Maps saying there's an incident ahead. Well, thanks, Google. You could have told me before I got on the on-ramp.
No, I swear by Waze. And, you know, for all that I thought WeChat was stupid with the little beans you got as a reward or whatever, I mean, I like it when I get my little 6 points on Waze for saying, hey, there's a traffic incident ahead, or, oh, I just spotted a cop on the side of the road.
So before I let you go today, Mark, let's talk a bit about the new macOS, macOS Mojave, I think it's called, or Mojave.
In fact, I wrote it down phonetically because I knew I'd cock it up. And I've got to look at how I wrote it phonetically because now it still makes no sense. Mojave.
Mojave, I think that's right.
Mojave. Mojave.
Mojave.
Talk about making it not easy for people around the world. But anyway.
Yeah, they could have just called it Lion or something.
Yeah, I mean, most people are going to go Mojave.
Mojave, yeah.
As we went with Yosemite as opposed to Yosemite.
So, Mojave, or however you pronounce it, the highlight seems to be, well, there are a couple of highlights. The new black or dark mode that they've introduced, which looks quite cool. I'd imagine I'd want to use that in the evenings rather than having this bright light in my face. And stacks for the desktop, which looks pretty cool, because I'm one of those people who tends to save everything on the desktop and then never clean up the desktop. What were your highlights in the new macOS?
Well, the two things I wrote down with that was, I mean, those things you spoke about now, they're great, and that's super duper. Would it wow me? No, it's a nice to have. If it didn't happen, I probably wouldn't even think about it. I like the idea. I've mentioned it already, that Microsoft Office 365 is going to be actually in the Mac App Store itself. Yep. So you can download it from Microsoft, but now it will be in the App Store, which also means you can pay using your iTunes account. For it. It doesn't make a difference. No, not really. But it's a nice thing. It's nice to know that they're holding hands.
Yeah.
And also what I do like, and this is getting into the developer side, and I'm a pro consumer. I like driving the car. I'm not too clued up under the bonnet, but the idea that certain iOS apps, certain iPhone apps are going to start appearing in the Mac store, because they're going to try and marry, you can answer this better than me, they're somehow marrying the software a little bit, that it's going to be a bit easier for developers to cross-platform their iOS apps into the Mac store, so that we have more apps, because so often there's a great app now, people are developing more for the iPhone
yep.
than they are for the Mac computer, and it'll be nice to get a few of the iOS apps working on a Mac computer.
Yeah, yeah. I think you've described it very well. I don't fully understand it myself, but I think they're going to be sharing more of a code base, which will allow developers to develop for iOS and then easily port those apps across onto macOS. So there'll be more apps available in the Mac App Store, which I've heard described as a bit of a desert. Not a huge amount of apps in the App Store for Mac. Certainly not when you compare it to the Apple App Store, the iPhone App Store.
I fully agree, and you know, I've always used the Mac store by default. That's still where I go to first if I want something. But probably half of the programs running on my MacBook are not from the App Store.
Yeah,
they're directly from the developer.
Yes.
Yes. And it would be nice. It's just a nice thing to know that they're all there. Also, you know, the great thing about having it from the App Store is that if you ever have to reformat your computer and start afresh. You know, there's a detailed listing of all the things you've downloaded. They're already paid for. It'll know that you've paid for them. You don't have issues, and you can just download them, dump them back onto your new computer. So it's from a management point of view, it's a lot easier to have it all from one place as opposed to, you know, if you didn't have the actual DMG file, you know, having to go to each individual website of each developer to pull back the software into your computer.
Yeah. So, Mark, was there anything else at WWDC this week that grabbed your attention that you're excited about seeing?
I'm busy having a look here. I mean, the whole AR thing, I mean, I think we have to mention it. It's a bit beyond me still.
Yeah.
But, you know, they demonstrated a Lego example with the real-life Lego on the table, but it's supplemented with artificial intelligence. I think that they called it AR2. And I thought that was a nice thing. I haven't quite figured out how I would use it yet. I do think, though, that... You know, they showed a Measure app.
That was cool. That was very cool.
That's very cool. Mm. I feel sorry for the guys that already have those apps in the App Store who suddenly won't get any more downloads. and I'm trying to remember the term. It's called Sherlocking, which is what they do.
Right.
And I'm not sure if you know the term Sherlocking.
I don't.
But there was an app, and I don't know what the app did, but the app was called Watson. It was a third-party app. It did whatever it did. And in one of the updates of software a few years ago, Apple, without paying for the rights of the Watson software, they copied it.
Oh dear.
And they made one of their own. And it became Sherlock. So the original one was by the third-party developer was Watson. Apple created Sherlock. And so from that point on, whenever Apple does something like that, it's called Sherlocking.
Okay.
And that's what they've done with the Measure app, because there's so many apps now that where you can measure your room. It, you know, you draw a line and it somehow measures, well, that's 4 meters by 3 meters. So they've now created their own app simply called Measure. And they've gone on Sherlocked again, but that's the way it works. If you think about the torches on the phone, you know, at one stage you didn't have a torch on your phone. You had to have a third-party app to get the light at the back of the phone to light up. And then they Sherlocked and just stuck it in there natively.
And no doubt the original developers of those apps are cursing and swearing at Apple when that happens.
Well, that's it. You know, the big brother took over and, ate more of the pie. But there's one thing we do need to mention as well. In terms of iOS 12, because we're all running iOS, if you do have an iPhone, iOS 11 point whatever it is at the moment, when iOS 12 comes out, and it's going to be in September, we think.
Yeah,
that's normally when it comes out.
Yeah.
Here's what's really great. With older phones, you're going to have a much better response rate. So all the way back to if you have an iPhone 5S, when you can put iOS 12 on, because so often, you know, they just start dumping the old phones that you can't. I've got an iPad where my daughter can't get the newest software on because the iPad's too old.
Yeah.
But back to the iPhone 5S, you'll be able to put iOS 12 on. And they talk about the performance increase, even on the older phones, is going to be dramatic. So I remember writing down, they had a couple of different stats, but one of them was the older phones will launch their apps 40% faster with iOS 12 than they will currently with iOS 11.
And presume
that's phenomenal.
I presume that will apply to the more modern devices as well. They'll also see a performance boost.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, everything will be super duper and marvelous. But if you think back to those that are running these older phones and everything is getting a bit sluggish, it's nice to know that they haven't forgotten about the older iPhone users as well, probably in the wake of what's happened in recent months with the whole, what would you call it, battery gate.
Yes.
You know, they're quite focused on people that haven't got the newest and latest. And I might add as well that I've always got the latest iPhone. I've always done it. This is actually the first time where I've gone, I'd love an iPhone 10.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. Am I going to pay that for an iPhone 10? You've got to be joking. I'm not due for an upgrade. In fact, my upgrade is probably due in the next month or two.
Well, there we go.
but what I'll probably do now is I won't get the iPhone 10. I'm close enough to September, October. I'll wait for the next generation because the iPhone 10 was so radically different.
Yeah.
I think that definitely with the second version, they would have tweaked and twiddled some basic things which they whispered to each other they didn't get right.
Mm.
But I don't know. I'm running the iPhone 7, so it's the first time I haven't upgraded to the newest and latest. I still love my iPhone 7. I'd love a 10.
Yeah.
But there's nothing wrong with the 7.
I must ask you, what is your view of the notch, the controversial notch on the iPhone 10?
Well, because I haven't actually, you know, I've played with my mate's phones that have got it, and, you know, I see they call it the ears as well, you know, because it looks like an ear on the left and the right. I don't sit and play with it to know whether, well, it's cutting into my video. I do like the idea of much more, I think they call it retail screen space, in terms of the form of the phone isn't much bigger than, say, my 7, but you're getting so much more screen space.
Yeah.
And I think and that's what I'm starting to do. I'm starting to use my phone more and more. When I lie in bed at night, in fact, my wife asked me the other night, I've got a TV on the wall. She comes into the room after putting the girls to bed. I'm lying in bed. I'm watching Netflix on my phone.
Yeah.
And I don't actually – it wasn't a conscious thing. I think I was maybe on WhatsApp and then Twitter, and then I just clicked on the Netflix thing, and the next minute I'm watching something. So I've got the big TV on the wall, but I'm watching it on my phone. So it's becoming more and more important to have
– a bigger screen.
That's – let me call it the retail space again.
Yeah.
On the visual space on your phone, the bigger screen is becoming more important. But having said that, a Plus is just too big for my pocket.
Okay. I was going to ask because Apple is rumored to be introducing a 6.5-inch iPhone 10 Pro or iPhone 10 Plus later this year. 6.5-inch is almost taking it into tablet size. That'll be too big for you, would it?
Well, also, I think what they are going to do, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but what they're going to be doing, very similar to what they did with the iPhone 10, so the iPhone 8 Plus, they will actually, I think the form factor will increase slightly, but the screen will go much more edge-to-edge like the iPhone 10 does within a chassis. So I think the screen is getting a lot bigger, but I don't think it's going to suddenly be an iPad-sized phone. I think they're just utilizing the bevels on the ends are going to be much smaller, very much like the iPhone 10 has maximized screen size. They will do that with this new Plus version. So it'll be a bigger phone in your hand, but it's not going to be astronomically bigger because they're just making better use of the screen.
Great. Mark, before I let you go, let me ask you this question. What product would you like to see Apple make that they don't currently make? There was, of course, rumors a couple of years ago that they were going to make the Apple Car. Those rumors have since died down. But is there something that you'd like to see from Apple, maybe VR goggles or AR goggles or something along those lines? What is not in their lineup that you would rush out and buy?
Well, there are definitely certain things, even within the existing lineup. Look, I can't wait for the HomePod. I want to try the HomePod. Mm-hmm. I do think now that they're not in routers anymore, because they've officially abandoned that, they'll still support it for a couple of years, and there's still stores with stock that'll flog it. I'm talking about the Expresses and the Capsules. I would love a little device that's got AirPlay 2 on it that I can turn a dummy speaker into an AirPlay 2 speaker. Mm-hmm. Similar to what that we have at the moment with the Apple Expresses, and I'm using two Apple Expresses at home, but they don't run on AirPlay 2. I mean, their software is kind of antiquated now. So, I mean, they're kind of hobbling along, but they're not that great. So I'd like a little AirPlay 2 device that you can turn a dumb speaker into a smart speaker. The TV, Apple TV, I still think there's a bit of love that needs to come to it. I'm not quite sure what. I swear by it, and I've got all these Apple TVs. Look, the old ones are now redundant, the Apple TV 3s. I mean, I stream Sky News on it, and that's pretty much it. But I still feel like they could focus a little bit more. And anything else besides that? The AR-VR thing, I think AR is, or AI is the way to go. Hang on, let me go. AR. Got to get my letters right here.
AR, augmented reality.
Yeah. Versus virtual reality. I think virtual reality, once again, is a bit too isolating. Whereas augmented reality, you still got an eye on the real world. And for me, I'd love to see that technology be used, but I don't know how. I don't have the foresight.
And it's probably
a good... What is your thing? If you as an Android user, what would you go for? What's the next Apple thing?
The next Apple thing I'd like to see is cheaper iPhones. Then I might consider moving to them. What would I like to see? I don't know. That's a good question. Maybe an Apple TV itself, a TV itself. Although the margins in that game are very poor, and that's probably why they haven't gone into that.
I used to think that as well. When there were rumors that there could be an actual Apple TV, I thought, but actually having the Apple TV box,
yeah,
it's fine. If someone from DSTV is listening, because I hear it's not going that well in terms of their department that develops apps. there was apparently a beta version of a DSTV app for the Apple TV,
yeah,
and it just never made it to public use. DSTV are running behind, and one of the biggest problems I think DSTV has, or South African productions have at the moment, is that with Netflix and all these streaming options, the shows that are losing out are the local shows, because that's the one thing often you can't watch.
Yes.
So if you take, I don't know what TV, I don't even know what's out there now because I don't watch it, but let's say that one of the cooking MK, what's that cooking show? Kitchen...
No idea, Mark. No idea, I'm afraid.
Okay, but there's a big kitchen show on a Sunday. Whatever.
Yeah.
We don't know. But now if DSTV actually got their act together and got an app with a streaming package.
Yeah.
So I'm still not talking about, well, you know, you've got to subscribe to the satellite package and maybe, you get the streaming free. Just develop it for an app that almost is like a Netflix. You've got the channels on there. And if it was a reasonable price, I'd subscribe to it. I would, that way I can catch up on some of the local stuff. And that's what's missing at the moment, is you can't watch the South African productions if you've cut the cord.
True. Or sport, for that matter. Or difficult to find the
absolutely.
Sport.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think DSTV needs to, because if you think about all the channels, if I've got BBC iPlayer, mm-hmm. I've got ITV Hub, which are the two big UK ones, and they work like a charm. If I miss X Factor... Yeah, I still won't watch it live, but I'll pick it up an hour or two later. And yeah, they slot an ad or two in the middle of it, but that's fine.
Yeah.
But at least it's there. So DSTV, I think, are running a few years behind, and I think it's to their detriment, because the reality is satellite is fading. It's all about streaming.
Rapidly. And they admit that as much. I had a chat with Calvin Mawela, the CEO of MultiChoice South Africa, a month or two back, and he said the satellite to home business is going to go away in the coming years, and they have to embrace streaming.
The freedom of not having to worry about where your dish is. So we moved into a new home about 10 months ago, and the very first thing I did, true story, the very first thing I did when I had a handyman come over to say, I need you to do some tweaks and twiddles, I said, take that dish off the roof. It looks ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, without the need to have a dish, you can put your TV wherever you've got a PowerPoint and you've got Wi-Fi or you know, a LAN cable, you can have your TV. You're no longer restricted by having to try and feed this DSTV cable, you know, through a wall and down and out. And so I really do hope that DSTV, even just initially, brings out an app like we have on the phone so we can stream some channels. But I think they need to eventually, the next step is to design a subscription package which is natively designed for streaming.
I think that's coming as well.
Not as an add-on to your satellite package.
They have said that is in the works and should be here early next year.
No, well, fingers crossed it happens.
Great stuff. Well, Mark, let's leave it there. It's been a fantastic discussion and real pleasure having you on the Tech Central podcast. Mark Pilgrim hosts the 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. slot on Hot 91.9. If you haven't heard his show, you're missing out. Go check it out. And Mark, hopefully we'll have a chance to get you on the show again soon. And thanks for your time.
I appreciate the invitation. Thank you so much, Duncan.